Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now an exit interview with the CUNY Chancellor, Matthew Goldstein, who announced last week that he will step down this summer after 14 years leading and transforming the City University. That makes him the longest-serving CUNY Chancellor, by the way, presiding over what is now a dozen four-year colleges, half a dozen community colleges, and some half a million students in either degree programs or continuing ed. Chancellor Goldstein, thanks for coming on and welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be with you.
Can I start with a CUNY 101 question? What's the City University for, and how do you see its mission compared to SUNY or to private colleges?
Well, we are the largest urban university system in the United States. A dominant number of our students commute each day, as I did when I went to City College. But at the end of the day, we want to give a strong educational experience to our students, and we are committed to work on the full spectrum of academic readiness. Many of our students have options to go to many universities of their choice because their academic backgrounds are quite exceptional. And other students who need to be remediated because they had not the kind of preparation that we would like to see in their K through 12 education. So, as I say, we look to educate the whole people. And I think over the past 14 years, my whole focus was to try to reform and redirect much of our energies to really secure the opportunities for that full spectrum of students.
And let's go back to the beginning of your time as chancellor, 1999, when the big change that you instituted and related to the remediation that you just mentioned was to end open enrollment at the major four-year colleges but keep it for the community colleges. And open enrollment meaning that any New York City public high school graduate automatically qualifies for CUNY. Why did you believe that was necessary at the time, and how would you say it's worked out?
I think it's worked out splendidly. As you indicated, or at least alluded to in your introductory remarks, we have the largest enrollment today in the university's history. And so many, many students are coming to the university, in part because they view it as a place where they can get a value degree. And by value degree, I mean reputation in the marketplace and cost. Why did I look to implement that progressive program? Very simply, that as an educator, and I've taught mathematics from freshman students to directing doctoral students, one of the things that you learn as an educator is that it's very, very difficult to target a curriculum when there is great variance in the academic preparedness of the students. Everybody loses. The poorly qualified students get lost very quickly because the level of instruction is higher than they can accommodate. And the much more prepared students oftentimes are bored, and they want to see much more, a much higher level of instruction. So what I was hoping to do by this reform was to reduce variance in the academic preparedness of the students so that we can target the educational experience in a way that would deal with homogeneity of experience. And I think it was exactly the right thing to do. Our retention rates are much higher. Our graduation rates are higher. And students are going on to do important things in their lives. So I think it was one of the most progressive things that we did here at the university during my tenure.
CUNY Chancellor Matthew Goldstein, my guest, as He is stepping down after 14 years. A New York Times article last May concluded that the effect of the changes that you were just describing has been what many on both sides of the 1990s debate predicted. At the top four-year colleges, Brooklyn, Queens, Baruch, City College, and Hunter, they rose in status, but Black and Hispanic enrollment declined, and that has become more pronounced during the recession since the financial crisis, let's say, as more formerly middle-class, higher-achieving high school students apply to CUNY because it's so affordable. How true would you say that is, and how much of a concern?
I think that that story was seriously flawed for the following reasons. It is not where you start. It's where you end up with a degree. And that's what our reforms ultimately succeeded in doing. If a student is not ready to get into, say, Baruch College, where today the average SAT scores are probably around 1230, but that they ultimately want to get a Baruch degree because it is viewed in so many quarters as a valued degree, we give the student an opportunity to start in an institution within CUNY that will prepare them and remediate their backgrounds and then go on and finish at Baruch, for example. If you look at the overall racial balance of the top four-year institutions, they look very different than the entering class. Yes, it is less Black and Hispanic in the entering class, but when you look at the graduating class of these institutions, Hispanic enrollment has gone up, and Black enrollment has gone down a bit, but not very much at all. So at the end of the day, for me, it's where you get your degree, not where you enter the institution.
And remediation is still a huge issue. It was reported just recently that 80% of New York City high school grads entering the community colleges today need remedial courses before qualifying for college-level work. Is that 80% CUNY's own number, your own number?
That is our number. 80% of the students, approximately, that enter our seven community colleges need some form of remediation. These are students coming in from largely the public schools, but other institutions as well. It's a number that is much too large. It's a number that concerns us. And it's a number that necessitates a lot of money that we have to spend to remediate these students to get them ready for college-level work. So that is the facts as we know them today.
Does that suggest an ongoing failure of the K-12 education system in the city, even after 12 years of the Bloomberg administration, when, as we know, he came into office saying his big legacy would be improving K-12?
I think what it means to me is that the university has to work even more closely with the DOE schools. And we probably have greater linkages and channels of communication with the schools that feed into CUNY than any other university in the United States. We cannot ignore the kinds of connections that we need to make to ensure that the students that are in K-12 understand what they need to do to prepare themselves for what is expected of our faculty. So I am not pointing fingers at anybody. What I think we need to do is just to communicate and make sure that the teachers, the curricula at the schools understand that they need to be aligned with what the expectations are at a university.
What more can the university do? You say the university needs to work even more closely with the public education K-12 system. What more can the university do that they don't have to do on their own?
Well, I think one of the things that I'm concerned about, and I'm very supportive of it, are the new Common Core curricula that are going to be instituted at most of the states in the United States, and certainly in New York State. And when the students are going to be taking these examinations, I suspect that the preparedness metric is going to point much more south than not. So when you say, what more can we do, I think we must be vigilant in working with this core curriculum, this Common Core curricula, even more aggressively than we were before.
Another of your initiatives at CUNY has been to establish an honors college that requires a high school average well over 90 and SAT scores, according to what I've read, close to 1,400 out of 1,600 to get in. That means you're competing for students who could get into prestigious private colleges or other colleges. Who goes to the honors college today?
Brian, we get about 10,500 applicants for the Macaulay Honors College. And we're only able to provide seats for about 400. So it is a very selective institution, highly sought after. I go to every graduation, and I am just delighted when I see these students getting into the best medical schools, law schools, coveted PhD programs, into the best training programs of major corporations. Who goes to Macaulay? It is some of the finest, well-prepared students across New York City. Many of them are immigrant students, the first in their class, and the first in their families to go to college. It's a wonderful, diverse group of students, and it's a great shot in the arm to the university, attracting these extraordinarily talented students. And it had a residual effect as well, which, quite frankly, I didn't anticipate, in that many of the students that are rejected find out about the City University in a much more in-depth way and decide to come and avail themselves for other kinds of scholarships that we provide. So it's had a wonderful effect, and something I'm deeply proud and excited about.
Although one of the critiques of the Honors Program, the Honors College, when you launched it, was that the City University is primarily for those students without other financial means. And students who did that well in high school can always get financial aid at other schools. So why spend tax dollars and limited CUNY resources on them? How do you answer that today?
Because I'll go back to what I said to you earlier in our discussion. We are here to educate the whole people. And by the whole people, I don't mean their ethnicity or their race. I think the whole people also means the full spectrum of academic ability. Much of what we do at the Honors College are monies that are developed through fundraising. And yes, there is some tax levy money, but we spend a lot of money for people who are poorly prepared, and there's no reason why we shouldn't spend money for people who are very well prepared.
About 5 years ago, you told the Center for an Urban Future that you've been able to make your biggest changes through, quote, enlightened management. And I know you didn't just mean yourself, but meaning with little private money and no real investment on the public side. Those were your words. But most people think of CUNY as a publicly funded school. So what did you mean by no real investment on the public side, and would you characterize it that way today?
Well, you know, we haven't had strong investment over a sustained period of time for our operating budget. But I must say that Andrew Cuomo, and I must give a shout-out to him, in the regard that he allowed both CUNY and SUNY to generate levels of support in ways that we were never able to do before, in particular in two ways. One, allowing us to have a more predictable tuition policy, and second, creating a maintenance of effort provision, which meant that in year two, our operating budget from the state would not dip below the operating budget that the state gave in year one. So that has given us a sense of stability that we've been able to capitalize upon. It's enabled us to develop what we call the CUNY Compact, which is a new financing model that requires various stakeholders to participate in the development of our operating budget. And when I came in 1999, the university was raising under $50 million a year, where now, because the reputation of the university is in a very different place, are raising close to $250 million a year. So that fundraising has become a significant component of supporting our operating budget. So when I say enlightened management, it is starting almost tabula rasa in the way in which we find creative ways to not only manage the institution through productivity measures that never were used before, but also to find different mechanisms to generate revenue and capital to invest in the university. On the other hand, we've had wonderful input of capital dollars, and the university, when you look at it today, looks so different than it was, say, 15 years ago, because we've literally spent billions of dollars on the capital side of our budget, which has been quite robust and made the university look and feel so different than it was a few years ago.
Circling back for a minute to the two-year versus the four-year colleges, we've gotten a couple of comments coming in, I guess from CUNY faculty members, who think on the opposite side of what we were talking about before, whether it's too restrictive for lower income or black and Latino students to get into the 4 years, that the transfer from community college to the 4 year schools for junior and senior year has become too easy. And in accomplishing that, you've watered down the curriculum for the four-year schools so that people could succeed. And I gather there's a faculty lawsuit about this. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think that is totally ill-informed by the data. Let me give you just a metric that will vitiate that comment totally. When you look at what happens to students who started our community colleges and then transfer to our senior colleges, on a going-forward basis, the successes of the students that transfer relative to the successes of the students that started at first-time freshmen are almost indistinguishable. And that's why I said it's not where you start, it's where you get your degree. And the New Pathways Initiative, which has had a fair amount of faculty pushback, and I'm not debating that, but I think this is, again, one of those reforms that over a period of years, like the changing of the number of credits from 128 to 120, like remanding remediation to our two-year institutions, will show over time that it was the right and proper thing for the university, and that the students are going to succeed in greater numbers with no dilution. And in fact, I think the entire process is going to be accretive. You know, at the end of the day, when you force so many students to take an inordinate amount of general education courses, you restrict their ability to be much more bold and imaginative in taking much more rigorous courses that they may not have had the options to take. And that's what these reforms are ultimately doing. So I dispute that quite aggressively.
Very briefly, congratulations on the Graduate School of Journalism. That's only been in existence for a few years. And I can tell you, we already get some of our best news employees from the Graduate School of Journalism as they finish up, and also as interns while they're going. So we can talk from WNYC's perspective, at least from my perspective, as a recent CUNY success. Just tell us how you see the job ahead for your successor in our last minute.
Well, the City University of New York is a complicated place. It's a big place. There's going to be numbers of challenges that my successor will have to confront. One is the vigilance in getting more and more private money, because I really don't see, given the weak balance sheets of states in general, especially after this very nasty recession that we've experienced, will be necessary in order to keep the university going. I think technology must have a much more prominent position in this university, as it is with other universities, and we must be very, very vigilant to our basic mission, and that is to educate to the best degree that we can this full spectrum of students, and that's going to require care and imaginativeness and doggedliness in the way in which we manage the institution.
Matthew Goldstein stepping down after 14 years as now the longest-serving chancellor of the CUNY system, stepping down this summer. Thank you very much for sitting for an exit interview.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Lee Meringoff from the Marist poll on how an Anthony Weiner candidacy could scramble the Democratic mayoral race. He has new numbers. Stay with us.